10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Oh, me? My gosh, look at this. Sunday night, live coast to coast, and now what you crave most. And then weather.
Hello, I'm Mr. Sterling.
A show is a show, as we all know, but there's one show on the radio that definitely doesn't blow. It's Sterling every damn night. Turn on the show on your radio. You'll laugh so hard you'll start to grow. They ought to pay him lots of dough. It's Sterling every damn night. Dom Giordano yaks and yaks and wastes the time of day. But Walter Sterling never talks unless he has something to say. So grab some Merlot and put on the show. It won't interfere with your workflow. It's number one in Kosovo. It's Sterling every damn night.
You ready? Let's go. This is what 50 clears were meant for. The absurdity of man. That's you. You ready? You ready to sing? Two, three. You ready? Come on. Step up. You know you want to do it. You're alone in the car with me. Everything's safe. This is a safe space. A safe space. Three, four, five, six, seven, and go. Oh my God, Steve Moore's going, there's got to be something better. There's got to be something better. Oh my God. Drive across the United States of America in our 18-wheeler. This is the music that lifts us to new heights. All right, that's enough of that. That's too much of that. Surprised we haven't had union complaints. Well, it's Coachella weekend. They got 2 weeks of this rolling around in the mud. I'm very happy to announce that we have a live feed from Coachella. What do you think? In about 15 seconds, we'll pick up the live feed from Coachella. You'll get to enjoy it as though you were there in an air-conditioned tent. If that isn't the lamest way to go to a concert, do you know there are people who go to Coachella, spend a fortune to get an air-conditioned tent, surrounded by plastic, and then they're able to sit? I'm not kidding. They're able to sit. Oh, wait, it's ready? Here we go. Oh.
Telling you now.
Unbelievable.
Telling you right away.
The voice of the desert.
I'm in love
Coachella.
With you now.
Coachella. Is going wild. They're going insane.
Say you love me. I will be sure I'm in love with you now.
out of control. They're going to rush the stage. Teens, they're going crazy.
Maybe you'll believe me when I'm finally blue. I'm telling you now, I know this is before. I will be sure I'm in love with you now. I'm in love with you now.
All right, that's enough. We're losing the satellite. We're losing the satellite. Coachella. There's an age at which you and I are not supposed to go to outdoor concerts in the desert, which has a special combination of 108 degrees and mud. 108 degrees and mud. Does that sound like something you should be doing? I will tell you the exact age at which you are to no longer go to places like Coachella. 18-year-olds can go to Coachella. The cutoff is 18 and a half. Once you're 18 and a half, you are not spiritually entitled to go to Coachella. No kidding. There are rich people, not oligarchs, but rich people, who rent big air-conditioned tents surrounded by clear vinyl. And they're able to sit in there on their Barco loungers and look at the surroundings, look at all of those wild hippies, those wild kids, and imagine they're experiencing Coachella. They are not. But they imagine it. They feel as though they're capturing the youth that they were denied because they were either too young to go to Woodstock or their parents had enough common sense to prevent them from going to Woodstock. Now, I don't know if you're in one of the tents at Coachella, do they Uber your drugs to you or their Mabac? What the hell is that wine, the happening wine today? Don't ask me. God, no, don't ask me. But there it is. And what do we hear? Every year at Coachella, we hear the same things. Mud, 108 degrees, California desert, sounds terrible, major acts didn't show up, and the Fry Festival. Ta-da! I have summarized for you in 28 seconds everything you're going to hear from other outlets over the past 2 weeks. Are you having a good time? Have you heard another show like this? I didn't think so. I did not think so. My name is Walter M. Sterling. This is a network radio show on every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. coast to coast on giant radio stations run by very serious people like Paul Vandenberg and Michael Ewing and Jay Clark. Very serious people. Phil Zachary, my buddy, my hero, Phil Zachary at WGAN in Maine. And James Copeland at KGGF in Kansas. I don't even need to know the name of the city in Kansas because the KGGF signal is so big, especially with that souped up stuff that Copeland does with that processing. You can hear it easily throughout Kansas, but mostly because it's flat. And my name is Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Gaffneys, meet the Gaffneys. They live in a 150-year-old house. They've got 8 kids. We don't have time to name them all. Sometimes Dan and Becky like to bicker, and it's always good for a snicker. When you're with the Gaffneys, you know it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. It's Sterling every damn night. Ah!
I'm Dan Gaffney.
And I'm Becky Gaffney.
We're here to give you a report on living with our 8 kids in our old house. Everyone except our oldest went to see the Minecraft movie. 9 tickets.
Which really I had no interest in, surprise, surprise, but it wasn't bad.
You knew nothing about Minecraft.
I know that it drives me crazy because when the kids all want to get together and play together, our older kids who don't live at home will come over and play with the little kids who do. Everybody gets in the living room together, and it's a bit overstimulating for me.
So we all went to the movies. I don't know much about it either, but there were enough dumb, I mean really dumb jokes that kept me entertained and laughing, so I'm okay with it. And I also like the nostalgia of the 80s throwback.
The 80s throwback was probably the funniest thing. And so the whole thing that the kids were all riled up about was that I guess they wanted Jason Momoa to play Steve, but then they hired Jack Black to play Steve, and they had to put Jason Momoa in, which is what created this 80s throwback character that you thought was hilarious.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
the former champion video gamer character who's still living as the champion video game guy from the 80s.
Yeah, with a muscle car that keeps breaking down. It reminded me of one of my brothers. I won't tell you which one. But that is what actually made the movie funny, I think. I think if he had been Steve and it had been just like an action-packed movie, I couldn't have handled it.
The other issue the children were talking about is, I hope Mom doesn't get a headache from all of the strobe lighty flashing sort of things on the screen.
I guess this is a warning. If you're like me and you're easily overstimulated by things like that, make sure you wear a hoodie so you can pull it up like a visor and then also push it into your ear canals so it's not as loud in the movie theater.
So in all these years of being together, this is the first time we all went to the movies as one big unit, 9 tickets. It went great. We had a super time. I give the movie 3.8 stars.
3.8 stars from you, a hoodie, and 2 fingers in the ears from me.
Follow me on Facebook, Dan Gaffney Show.
If you want to find me, you can find me on Instagram as Just Being Mom.
Dan and Becky Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Emotional support horses? Well, details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain why it's important to stay awake while you're conducting surveillance on a stolen vehicle. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Dress-up day leads to jail. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
All right, good evening, Walter M. Sterling. It's a big network show at about 25 minutes past the hour, driving across the country, praying for a Buc-ee's. But you're only going to find them in, like, South Carolina, maybe Texas, Florida. But they're not on signs. It took me a long time to realize, why is it that no Buc-ee's is on a sign listing attractions coming up? There are other rest stops, but not Buc-ee's. And then I realized what the problem is. With one exception, Buc-ee's does not allow 18-wheelers in. If you don't know what a Buc-ee's is, I understand that. There are not a lot of them. They tend to be in Florida and Texas and South Carolina and Kentucky. This is the fantasy rest stop. The fantasy rest stop. You know how in many rest stops, even ones with brand names, you're scared if it says Sheetz or Wawa. It still can be dicey. As my mother would go, it's a little dicey there. I don't know if we need to stop there. Can we wait a little bit? Can you wait? Do you have to go now? That is the chorus of mothers throughout the country at about this time of night on a Sunday. Do you have to go now? Really? You can't wait? Bucky's is this fantasy rest stop. If you don't know about it, I urge you to do whatever you have to do to get to one. Before people told you about Waffle House, or before you went to a Waffle House, you went, okay, and then you went to a Waffle House, and it was life-changing, wasn't it? Well, Bucky's will change several lives all at once. Imagine this, a gas station with 100 pumps.
What?
100 pumps. And the cheapest gas you're going to find today, it's probably like $2.59. Let's look that up. But once you get inside the Bucky's, it is at least 300 yards long, maybe more. And all the foods you want to eat, they make there, including my sucker punch, fudge. Oh, you want fudge? Yeah, we make it. The place is immaculate. If you're alone and you like to smoke, since I know you can't smoke with anybody else, they have every brand of cigarette there is. And all the iterations, all the strange iterations of the cigarettes that you like. I don't know why I thought of that. Yeah, I do. You know why? I never smoked cigarettes. I don't view it as a moral issue. But I never smoked cigarettes. I'm the only person in radio pretty much who's never smoked cigarettes. After I had cardiac surgery about 2 years ago, from that moment till this, at least once a day, I want a cigarette. How self-destructive can that be? That after having had very successful cardiac surgery, and not open heart, oh, thank you, God. No, but I've had a craving for cigarettes ever since. For no particular reason. They tend to happen when I'm listening to a Sinatra record or At Last by Etta James. That's when I want a cigarette. Don't ask me why. But that's when I crave them. But Bucky's, you've got kids, every type of toy, stuffed animal. And the store isn't just one big open convenience store. It is set up in sections and themes with different scenery. And the restrooms are immaculate. And I could go on and on. I've only been in a Bucky's once, but clearly I have not gotten over it. I drove down to from Philly to Nashville to go to the Radio Hall of Fame event to see my friend Lee Harris get the well-deserved Radio Hall of Fame award and to make an elegant speech and, more importantly, to mention my name. It was a really well-done event this year. They did a good job. Mr. Green and Mr. Kitchen did a really good job this year. So that was fun. But the best part was that little trip.
Boom, boom, Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
How does it feel to be with Walter M. Sterling on Coachella weekend?
Oh, man, I think they should introduce Kazoo to Coachella. What do you think?
Well, tonight, when I was listening to Coachella, our live feed, I heard the kazoo. Now, have you ever been to Coachella? Do you know people who have been to Coachella?
No. It's like going to the beach where you end up with sand in places you never knew existed. I won't even try it.
What I find most shocking about Coachella is that it's not a real concert. It's out in the desert, 108 degrees, 20 feet of mud. But if you were to look around, you would see there are very few concert goers. However, there are maybe thousands of people in incredibly expensive air-conditioned tents where there should be people sitting in the mud. But instead, there are these executives from the labels or executives from the media sitting in air-conditioned tents. I'm going to have to check during one of our overly long breaks to see how much it costs to rent an air-conditioned tent. And
don't forget the Malbec.
Is that how it's pronounced? I never knew how to pronounce it. And pray to God I never drink it. Just pray to God I never drink it. My God. How is Malbec? Do you enjoy that? Is that something you do?
Not as much as Petit Sirah.
Oh, can you spell that?
No.
Very good. Well, I guess with that, I'm just going to shut up now and let you.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm just going to shut up now and let you do the movies.
No, I was just thinking about Buc-ee's and how inexpensive they are. You know, I just want everyone across the country that loves this program, is an honorable misfit listening right now, that here in Culver City, on Culver Boulevard, right across from the Sony Studios that used to be MGM in the old days, there is a Shell station. And right now, on this street, the movie capital, they're paying $5.59 for regular. I'm looking at the sign right now.
No.
And $5.89 for premium. $5.89 for premium, which I have to put in my antique car. So, feel better, America.
The most I could pay for premium today, within 50 miles of Philadelphia, would be $3.50.
Wow. Well, I would love that.
Yeah. But then you'd have to live in Philadelphia, so there you go.
Let's talk about a movie that's got some gas this weekend. And I wish we could have Father Drucker on for this one, because I'd like to hear his thoughts about this. This movie has grossed $19 million in 3 days. It's the number two movie in the country, and it's a cartoon, a feature-length cartoon based on the greatest story ever told, The King of Kings. This is made in South Korea, by the way, by a South Korean director, released here by the obviously faith-based Angel Studios. They put out a lot of stuff that seems to be making money today. And it's called The King of Kings, and it's based, of course, on the great story, but in an interesting angle in which Charles Dickens, the great author you may or may not know, wrote a book in about 1849 about the life of our Lord, in which he wrote it for his children. So this takes the idea that it's the story of Charles Dickens, who's voiced by Kenneth Branagh, who has a rambunctious young son who's voiced by Roman Griffin Davis, who plays around with swords a lot, and his pop says, you know, you ought to not play with that. Let me tell you a different kind of story. And then he starts to relate the story of the greatest story ever told in the life of Christ. And so within it, you've got some really fine voice actors. Oscar Isaac is the voice of Christ. Mark Hamill is King Herod. Pierce Brosnan is Pontius Pilate. Ben Kingsley, Forrest Whitaker, and Uma Thurman are featured throughout the story. So, you know, it's really engaging, and it's the perfect movie if you believe in the Christian faith and you want to educate your kids in the traditions of this story. This is a perfect movie for you because it does it in a swift 104 minutes, and it's entertaining enough for the kids with the small Roman Griffin Davis character, who's the son of Charles Dickens, who has a little cat and sort of wanders in and out of these biblical stories. So, well done for what it is. But we will not find in it too much on the Mary Magdalene issue, but but more on the goodness of the story of the King of Kings. So that's the number two movie in the country right now, Walter.
Now, have you seen the Minecraft movie yet?
No, I haven't, and I'm glad the Gaffneys did. They seem to enjoy it much more, but apparently they were not at a screening where Jack Black induced violence among rowdy teenagers.
How did I miss that? Were you at a screen? No, you weren't at a screening, but did that happen? Did Jack Black induce violence among teenagers?
Yes, well, he's saying this line, chicken jockey, and then suddenly all the kids revolt in the theater. And they just throw popcorn and trash the theater. And several theaters in New Jersey had to put up several signs. You know, we were all teen boys once. I mean, those of us who were boys. And, you know, we got into mischief. I mean, I understand it, but it is kind of a crazy thing. I mean, I just hate to be the guy sitting next to the kid that decides to dump popcorn all over me. That would not make for an agreeable afternoon or evening at the movies.
The only time I misbehaved like that in a movie was the very first Indiana Jones movie came out. When the very first Indiana Jones movie came out, I was sitting in the back of the theater, and there was that scene where spiders came out of everywhere. They landed on the characters in the movie. Remember that? There were spiders everywhere. Yeah. And I had paper clips. And I threw the paper clips. I threw the paper clips into the crowd. Who knows where they came from? But there was much squealing and excitement. Let me tell you, Mateus.
Oh, that's classic.
Thank you. Thank
so
you.
So, did the manager hire you to do that at every show?
No, no. It was actually in San Francisco. Therefore, management wasn't involved. You know, that would be too authoritarian in San Francisco.
Right.
That just wasn't going to happen. all right, my friend, you're going to be with us Friday on Sterling every damn night, correct?
That's right. I can't wait.
All right. Now, how do we find more about you? Where do we find you on Facebook? How do people send you secret notes?
Oh, that's what I love the best. Matias Bomballs Hollywood on Facebook. MATIASBOMBAL Hollywood. One more time. MATIASBOMBAL Hollywood on Facebook. And I look forward to your secret message.
And I look forward to having you on the show. This has been a definite upgrade that our friend Viva Las Vegas introduced me to you, and it was one of the finer things she did. Not up there with the foot massage, but it's definitely one of the finer things that she's done. All right, Mateus, thank you very much for being on Sterling every damn night. Hello, I'm Walter M. Sterling. I have an email. It's waltermsterling@gmail.com. waltermsterling@gmail.com. We're driving across the country, up and down I-4 in Florida to see Michael Ewing. When you get to Sebring, Florida, I want you to stop and visit Michael Ewing and Jay Clark. Knock on the door of their radio station. There aren't too many there. You'll be able to figure it out. Tell them, Mr. Ewing, I want you to give me lunch. Tell him you expect lunch, and then you expect him to play golf with you and Lou Severin and have a grand afternoon. This is the best job in the world. I just have the best time. You ready? Okay. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Frequently, our dancers at jiggle joints throughout the old U.S. of A. and probably around the world. Sometimes these wonderful ladies come in dressed up like Catwoman or Wonder Woman. Sometimes they're just dressed in a wonderful negligee. When an exotic dancer dresses up, it's, shall we say, titillating and exciting for the patrons. That's not what happened at Bucks Platinum in northern Toledo, Ohio. Christopher Andrew, 58 years old, showed up dressed up for playtime at Bucks Platinum. He was dressed as a police officer and apparently hoping for first responder side hustle stuff, where the ladies would be thrilled to help one of our police officers get up for the job, boost their morale. Yeah, that was wrong. Club called the cops. The real cops showed up. Christopher Andrew busted for a couple of things. Number one, impersonating a police officer and carrying a gun inside this wonderful strip club. He was also wearing body armor. And he also had a semi-automatic rifle. Exotic dancers are no fools. Toledo police cuffed this man and sent him off to jail. And first responders breathed deeply, realizing only legit first responders get that lap dance. From the champagne room, this is Velo Hool. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Emotional support horses? Well, details later. The people of Walmart. Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari, and on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I explain why it's important to stay awake while you're conducting surveillance on a stolen vehicle. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Feel the dough, eat the dough, J.B. Bakery, Salida and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Holy Week, and therefore to celebrate and respect Holy Week, we have Salina, manager of J.B. Bakery, Burlington, New Jersey, and Father James Drucker. Yes, an actual Catholic priest, not one playing a Catholic priest. He's been a practicing Catholic priest for 40 years. He was the official Navy chaplain in Desert Storm, helped thousands of young men and women get through the hell of war and recover in their hospital beds, and he is a great man. And I know he's a great man because he goes to J.B. Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey, where he mooches off of Selena and Stephen and eats their food, whether they let him to or not. Is that about right, Father?
I have my own J.B. Bakery mug, a blue mug, in honor of the Blessed Mother Mary.
I'm very jealous. I have no J.B. Bakery merch. You have merch from J.B. Bakery. It's very impressive, Father.
And the coffee is out of this world, ground right there, cream and some sugar. And in Philly, as we say, I remember telling you the story about Emerson College with Henry Winkler, the Fonz, I drink coffee half and half. I learned to say coffee half and half, but I think preferably for our audience here in Philadelphia, I like my coffee half and half.
Well, that's good. You've done an entire stage act now before I've even asked you a question. Now, Father Drucker and Selena, I'd like to point out something I just realized today while I was puttering about people in radio and about Catholic priests. There's an astonishing and terrifying similarity. Would you like to know what it is?
Oh, I'm spellbound here, please. I'm with bated breath.
Whenever I'm asked, how'd you get into radio? Why'd you get into radio? My answer is always the same. I said, we are like priests. It is a calling. We have no choice. We had a calling, and we also take the vow of celibacy and poverty. The similarities between disc jockeys and priests are astonishing. The vow of poverty, the vow of chastity, and it's a calling. We had no choice. Now, what's even more amazing about Father Drucker is that before he was a priest for 40, 45 years, he was not a failed disc jockey. He was one of the most successful disc jockeys in American radio.
I'm honored.
No, sir. He was a disc jockey on WARM in Scranton, which in my opinion, and in this one instance in my life, my opinion matters about this. WARM was the best radio station I ever heard, and I didn't grow up with it. It wasn't like my hometown station. My hometown station was freaking WABC in New York, but WARM was better. Now, there's Selena. Are you finally done with your tests? Are you finally done with your baking? What's going on, Selena?
There's a lot going on, Walter, especially now that it's Holy Week. We're getting ready for Easter, and honestly, it seems like everybody is doing a whole lot of nothing this year for Easter, but I've got about 3 more weeks to get through all my classes and tests, and just it's a lot of paperwork, but I'm getting through it.
Selena is the manager of J.B. Bakery. She's also attending college, and Steve, the baker, a brilliant baker, who's the owner, they're together for, I don't know for how long, but I think they're stuck with each other. That's frankly what I see your future, which means that you're meant to be married, because most people who are married view it as stuck with each other. Stephen, what is your hot seller this week at J.B. Bakery?
The hot seller this week is definitely the Easter egg cakes, the nice vanilla cake covered in chocolate ganache and decorated with wonderful spring flowers. We're making them in different variety, vanilla, chocolate. And they're very delicious, and they're definitely a hot seller. Also doing Easter bread babka. The babka is very popular because it has a cheese. There's a variety. There's cheese. There's walnut. There's chocolate. I got a raspberry. And also, do you want to hear more about this?
No, because I will send you the recipe for the babka bread. You send me a note, waltermsterling@gmail.com. I'll send you a recipe for that. And the upside down cake. What was the other thing that we've got that we can share? What's the other recipe?
The pineapple upside down cake, which is perfect for springtime. It has a nice slice of the pineapple. And it's a vanilla cake with the wonderful glaze on top. And I said that the baking tip for that is to use the pineapple juice instead of the milk that is called in the recipe. Use the juice. It gives a lot of flavor of the pineapple, makes it nice and moist, and that's what we want. We want a nice, moist cake with wonderful flavor. Wouldn't that be the best?
Yes, that would be fantastic. Now, Father Drucker, when you go into JB Bakery and Mooch, what one thing do you crave the most? One item, not a speech, Father. One item.
Well, my favorite is a chocolate chip cookie, but today I had the sticky bun. It was out of this world with raisins. Absolutely, with my coffee. Right. With my mug, by the way.
This is a lot of baking porn, and I'd be happy to send you a recipe. Send me a note, WalterMSterling@gmail.com.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Coming up in just seconds, another live feed from Coachella. But first, weather with Dr. Dave. Look at this. Coachella is going on right now, and it's very difficult to get satellite time out of Coachella to broadcast it to you, but I've managed to secure a short amount of satellite time, making it possible for you to enjoy Coachella. I think it's coming up now. It's hard to say. Let's see. Oh, there we go. Live from Coachella.
Have on a guitar. I got the fever. That's rock and roll. I've played at parties, played in bars, spent my money buying new guitars. See my heart, but
oh my God, the crowd's going insane. Everybody's involved. International. Live from Coachella. What? Oh, we've lost the satellite feed. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. Live from Coachella. I have to find out what it costs to rent an air-conditioned tent at Coachella. That's my next goal. Because, you see, if you and I went to Coachella, we would be miserable. We would be in mud. We would not have catering. We might get a $25 hot dog. That's it. We'd be in 2 feet of mud, far from the stage. Because unless you're the CEO of a label or a media company, you can't go there. You can't afford to go there. It's miserable. If you're 18, you go once. This is a 2-week event, you understand. This is, you go once, and you go for half a day, and you can tell your friends forever that you were at Coachella. But then after that, the next point at which you should never be at Coachella is when you hit a certain age, and that age is 18 and a half. The minute you're 18 and a half, you have no business being at a live outdoor concert that is more than 2 hours long, and you can bring a lot of blankets, and they serve tea. you go to Blossom in the Blossom Stadium outside of Cleveland. You can go there. That's it. But there's no reason for you and I to go to a real outdoor concert. It's just a lot of people feeling very guilty that they couldn't go to Woodstock, or their mother wouldn't let them go, or that they were way too young. Please, don't even get crazy. Don't even think about it. Oh, my God. It reminds me of the horror that as we enter spring, when you and I were in school, we thought, oh, boy, vacation. We're going to have vacation coming up. We're going to go on vacation. But then as an adult with children, vacation becomes a very different prospect, an entirely different event. When I think as a vacation as an adult, for some reason, the number 14 pops into my head every time. I think of the number 14 because that always seems to be how long it's going to take me to drive to a beach. Now, I can get to a beach much sooner than 14 hours. From Philadelphia to down the shore is maybe 90 minutes. Maybe. But that isn't the luxury that I get. If I live in Jersey, I could get down the shore in less than 2 hours. Boston, I can get to Cape May, WGAN. I can get to Cape May off the coast of May, 2 hours? To the beautiful, magnificent Maine coast, 2 hours. The correct answer is 2 hours. Instead, the first thing I thought of about vacation this year, I'm like, oh no, I'm going to have to drive 14 hours to the Outer Banks. Now, people who live in North Carolina have said to me, good friend of mine, Brian Maloney, who should air this show, Brian Maloney says, what's at the Outer Banks? Now, he lives in Raleigh. He's never been to the Outer Banks. And he goes to me, what's at the Outer Banks, Walter? And the answer is nothing. There is nothing, which apparently is the appeal, but not to me. Because having grown up at the Jersey Shore and Cape Cod and Florida, the beach has two components. There's the beach, there's the road, and on the other side of the road are fun things like fudge shops and puppet stores and wet tea contests. But at the Outer Banks, there's the beach, and then on the other side of the road is nothing. I'm like, and I have to drive 14 hours for nothing? I could talk to my accountant and have more fun. Walter M. Sterling. Hello. This is a network radio show coast to coast from WGAN to KFBK. And I have an email, and I'll be happy to send you an email with a terrific recipe. Upside down cake, Easter babka, and the best chocolate chip cookie you ever had in your life. Send me a note, WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. It's free. Not going to follow you. Not going to send you 400 emails after that. It's just a gift from me to you because I know that you're obsessed with carbohydrates. Walter M. Sterling. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Now, join lesbians in space.
I just wanted to let you know, you look like the type of girl I would go lesbian for.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Can I get your number?
Sure.
Why awesome.
Send every night, the cop on is alive. Neon lights flicker, the patrons talking jive. Bullets over trailer parks under the moonlit sky. The big Ferrari always gets this guy.
Hey,
Hi, Walter. On this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I tell the story of the painted box truck. So it was the late 90s. I'm in the auto crime division, and I get a tip that a stolen box truck used to transport meat for a wholesale provider in the meatpacking district on the west side of Manhattan was stolen, and the vehicle had been transported up to the Inwood section of Manhattan and was sitting in a parking lot. So it was late on a Friday, and we were about to go home at 6 o'clock, and I explained it to my sergeant, and he goes, well, let's go up there and see if, you know, maybe we can get something with this. So across the street, there was another parking lot. We set up. We see the truck. And written on the side of the truck said Black Hawk Meat. So we had the right vehicle, and I looked at my sergeant and I said, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to recover this thing? And he says, well, let's sit on it for a while and see if someone gets in it. And then our informant called up and said, yes, they're going to move the truck again later today. So we figured instead of just recovering the truck, let's make some arrests. So we sat on this thing for about 4 or 5 hours. It's getting late, and I look at my sergeant, and I go, what do you want to do? No one's gotten into this thing. He goes, let's just give it a little more time. So we had been up already about 17 hours, and we both fell asleep in our car. And a couple hours later, I wake up. The sun's coming up. The truck is gone. And I said, oh, my God, I don't believe it. And he goes, what? I go, look. I don't see the Black Hawk Meat thing on the side of the truck anymore. And he goes, oh, my God, what are we going to do? How are we going to explain this to the lieutenant? So this is before cell phones. He jumps out of the car. He's looking for a payphone. And what I realize is the truck is still there. What had happened was when we fell asleep, somebody came over with paint and rollers and just painted over where it said Black Hawk Meat. Obviously, they were going to take the truck somewhere else, and they didn't want the markings on the truck. So he comes back to the car, and he goes, come on, we got to go. I got to find a payphone. I go, truck's right there. And he goes, what are you talking about? I go, it's there. He goes, that's not the same truck. I go, look closer. And he grabs a set of binoculars. He goes, oh, my God, I can see Black Hawk Meat coming in through the paint. I said, yeah, let's get over there. So we drive into the parking garage. Of course, the attendant plays dumb that he doesn't know anything what we're talking about. And we were able to recover the truck minus the meat, which had already been unloaded before it made its way to the garage. So we recover it. We have it dusted for prints, and we send the box truck out to the White Stone Pound. So the following day, our lieutenant gets us, and he goes, what happened with that truck? Did you recover it? We said, yeah. He goes, any arrests? We both looked at each other. We started to laugh. We said, no, no arrests. We fingerprinted it, so it's pending. So sometimes you snooze, you lose in the NYPD. So for more behind-the-scenes stories, be sure to pick up a copy of my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction.
Here's the story of a radio executive.
Walter M. Sterling and you every damn Sunday from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. East Coast time. Mateus, M-A-T-I-A-S, Mateus Antonio Bombal does Hollywood information for us. Film critique, gossip. He's a great guy. And he's in Hollywood. And I mentioned that he's on Facebook at Mateus Antonio Bombal, and it's worth looking up. I just saw this now. He took a picture of two flowers from his garden, a sterling rose and a red rose. I swear, Mateus, these are the most beautiful roses I have ever seen. And he wrote, heavenly perfection in my yard today. This is in your yard? Congratulations, Mateus. You grew these roses? A sterling purple lavender rose and a red rose, M-A-T-I-A-S. Go take a look at it and click like and let Mateus know you are grateful for him. Do you know what a sterling rose is? Do you remember the significance of the sterling rose? back when you watched General Hospital every day after school, the Sterling Rose, a bouquet of Sterling Roses showed up on General Hospital. I forget who they showed up for, but the local detective, the local police detective said, Sterling Roses, the mark of the Cassadines. What? It was the first episode, the first week of episodes that John Stamos was in Blackie Parrish on General Hospital. Blackie Parrish on General Hospital. Here, I'm going to name drop. You ready? My wife and I were invited to Howard Stern's wedding, to Beth. And at his table was John Stamos, as it should have been. We were right next to his table. Now, not being sane, my wife said, you know, we're right next to Howard's table. This is a big deal. We're well positioned. And when I went up to shake hands with Howard and congratulate Beth, and Howard introduced John to us, this young man, John Stamos, stood up instantly, put his napkin down, shook my hand, shook my wife's hand. Total gentleman. Could not have been kinder or more generous. Very happy to talk to us. Had no idea who we were. Could not have cared less. What he knew is that we were Howard's friends. And he was Howard's friend. And that's how a gentleman acts. And it was just nice to see a young man who had manners. You know, nice to see, and Jimmy Kimmel was also at his table. And, oh my gosh, it's great. Finally we get to meet each other. That was his subliminal message, Jimmy Kimmel's subliminal message, that when he was looking for work as a talk show host, I probably didn't, get right back to him, just guessing, hard to tell. But that was quite a wedding. Howard Stern's wedding was quite a wedding because Billy Joel was there. There was a band, a wedding band, an excellent wedding band. And I promise you, Howard did not say to any of the many musicians at that wedding that, I hope you'll play. I promise you. He didn't say to Billy Joel, I hope you play. But son of a gun, after about 2 hours, Billy Joel went up to the band, said, can I play at the this piano? Can I play at your piano? And they're like, oh my gosh. And he did. He played at the piano. And then who else played? The Dixie Chicks. The Dixie Chicks were there, and they also played. This was a really good wedding. This was a really good wedding. Now, how the hell did I get there? I'll tell you how. It's because when I was consulting Sirius Satellite Radio, I was the first one to pick up the phone and say, it's time for you to come here. It's time for you to come here, Howard. And 4,000 negotiations later, he did. Mark Rolwin at Apollo and Joe Clayton, they made all of that happen. What a great man. Mr. Stern is as entertaining as you find him to be. That is how great a man he is. And I value that friendship because I really don't know anybody famous. I know John Cobalt and Paul Vandenberg. Who else? Michael Ewing. Bill White. I know Kitty at KFBK. That's pretty much it. Yeah, that's enough. All right, now coming up, I'm going to share with you how to know for sure if a restaurant's going to be not so great. There's a code word that they use in the restaurant industry that I had not realized till very recently. It may thrive. It may do well. The restaurant may do well, but the food's not going to be so great. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Public Shame Radio. Sterling every damn night.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Walter M. Sterling, good evening. It's very exciting to have a live radio show. There are no other live radio shows on right now. The Gold Show, Annuities and You, those aren't live. Those are recorded months ago. They've been repeated 18 times. This is brand new. It's not worth repeating. That's the difference between this show and all other shows. The other shows are repeated endlessly on the weekend. This show is not worth repeating. I don't know why I didn't know this earlier in life. But there's certain self-descriptives that restaurants use that are dead giveaways that they're not really good food. They may be very comfortable. They may look terrific. But the food isn't very good. I have found this week, my wife and I went to dinner for our anniversary. Our anniversary isn't for 2 weeks, but she's going to be out of town. It's all very complicated. I don't understand any of it. I live my marriage on a need-to-know basis. How about you? My wife and her sister, they're in charge of my marriage. Whatever happens between them, that's my marriage. I'll get memos later. I'll get some updates as to what I'm supposed to know, not know, where the coffee table's supposed to go, where the new lamp is supposed to go. I get those memos later, and then I do what I'm told, like you do. Well, it was anniversary time. This is our anniversary month. And she had kept passing in the suburbs. She kept passing this restaurant that was in a 200-year-old building, a colonial building. It was very romantic. It looked very nice. It was next to a stream. White clapboard construction. Benches on the outside. She was very anxious to take me there. She thought it was very sweet, very pretty, and it was very sweet and very pretty. We make a reservation. I say, oh, and it's our anniversary. Oh, we'll give you the corner table, they say. And I'm like, wow, they're going to give me the corner table. We show up. Sure enough, it is adorable inside. It has custom stained glass. And the custom stained glass shows scenes, depicts settings from the community. It's very much part of the community. It's named for their relatives, a whole thing, right? And now we get seated in the corner table. And the restaurant's doing well. Every table is occupied. Reservation was easy to get, but not that easy. Well, you know, we can't come at 7, but could you come at 7:15? Yeah, okay, we'll come at 7:15. To me, it's like the same thing. And now we're sitting down, and we're in the corner table, which is comfortable and romantic and in the nice window, and it's very pretty. And then we eat, and I'm like, you know, it's not cheap. We're expecting a little bit for this. She ordered the most expensive thing on the menu, which was $57. All right, that's all good. That night, she says out of nowhere, she goes, you know, that food wasn't really that great. Now, it took us a while for that to sink in because the setting, the price, the location, we expected it to be great. It had been around a while. It had tenure. It got good enough reviews, but it wasn't great. And then I realized what it was. The truly great restaurants that I've had the privilege to dine in, and maybe you've had the privilege to dine in, at no time ever described themselves as romantic. Romantic. Cozy. This restaurant was all about cozy and romantic. Didn't say the best food you ever had in your life. Didn't say 5 stars. Didn't say great food. It definitely was not bad food, but it did not say great food. And at the price, it should have been great food. But later on, I reflected deeply. And I thought, now, the places that I've had great food never call themselves romantic, do they? They never say, oh, we'll give you a nice cozy booth in the corner. The 5-star, 4-star James Beard restaurants don't say, we'll give you a nice cozy booth. You're just lucky to be here. The great restaurants are pretty much work on the basis of, you're just lucky to be here. 11 Madison in Manhattan, you're just lucky to be here. That restaurant was so great, 11 Madison in Manhattan, that the founder of it, he had to sell it because he wasn't good enough for it. It became such a great restaurant, such a 5-star restaurant, that the Danny Meyer, who was the founder of it, who built it out, it's an incredible facility. It's beautiful. Yeah, he couldn't handle it anymore. There's too much pressure to maintain that restaurant. He was going to go back to Shake Shack. Danny Meyer created both the best restaurant in New York City and Shake Shack, the most troublesome restaurant in America. Yeah, $90 for a cheeseburger. It'll take a long time. Something, you know? But there it is. As a rule, if it says romantic, it is not a great restaurant. I think that's safe. Is that safe? Lately, on my algorithm on Facebook and TikTok and Instagram, on my algorithm, I keep getting ads for fudge. I don't know why, but I keep getting advertisements for fudge. It pops up, strawberry shortcake fudge, strawberry cheesecake fudge. I'm like, I don't want strawberry shortcake fudge. I want strawberry shortcake, but I'd like peanut butter fudge or peanut butter and chocolate fudge. That's what I'd like. And I'm looking at this stuff like, every time, these are the most erotic and appealing photographs of fudge I have ever seen. I don't know how they do it. I don't know what they do to take those pictures, but they're stunning. Never has fudge looked so good. And, you know, I'm a type 2 diabetic. There's a limit to how much fudge I can have, as in none. I can have none. And then I look at the price, and they want $13 for half a pound of fudge and $8 to ship it. I could have the fudge maker come from Bucky's to stand in my kitchen and make the fudge and do it for cheaper. But I don't know how to make it stop. I don't know how to dissuade the algorithm from constantly sending me these erotic pictures of fudge, peanut butter walnut fudge, peanut butter chocolate fudge. This is an endless stream of harassment to me. Yeah, once, a month ago, I bought the fudge. Once. And you know what? It was fudge. It was fudge. All right, we'll have more from Coachella coming up in seconds. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Now, join lesbians in space.
In a relationship, I always let them know. I'm always like, I'm the man one. I'm the man one. Me. I'm the man one. And every time the woman one is like, oh my God, you sound obnoxious and ignorant and like, you don't even know what you're talking about. I'm like, yeah, see?
I have a sad story to tell you. It might give you a bit of a fright, but now when you put on your radio, it's Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Put on the radio and turn out the light. When Sterling worked for the network, his Brooks Brothers suit really fit. But his bosses decided to fire him when they got tired of all his Sterling. Every damn night, put on the radio and turn out the light. Then Sterling became a consultant. He'd make your radio station a hit. But now that he's no longer engaged, those stations all sound like Sterling. Every damn night, put on the radio and turn out the light. Now Sterling's back on the radio. The kids say his show's really lit. And if any program directors don't like it, it's just because they're all full of Sterling. Every damn night, put on the radio and turn out the light.
Sterling every damn night. And times that really ease back. You and me, cause I can't decide if we're through. What are we? And if we are, what we gonna do?
Relationships, what's all this talk about relationships? It feels like everyone's got a thing.
Oh, just you and you must be nervous.
Haim actually is playing at Coachella, which would be sort of a joke on me, but it says there may be a surprise set. They have often appeared at Coachella, but because they're Californians, I think they knew what to do, which was to go, perform, and disappear very quickly, to do an Irish goodbye, as Jews, to do an Irish goodbye, Haim. I don't know if they played or not. And I'd say, hey, well, if you know if I'm played at Coachella, let me know. But I know you, and I know that you have no idea. It's the last thing in your mind. But that's the big concert this weekend, last weekend is Coachella, which we have no interest in going ever, as long as we live, ever. I think at some point they should just stop doing it, right? They should just stop doing it. But here's what you and I are concerned about. There are certain things in our lives that collect guilt. We get them, we mean well, and they collect guilt. Slow cookers. I'm sure for some holiday you got a slow cooker. You didn't buy it for yourself. No one buys themselves a slow cooker. It's given to you by a well-meaning aunt. And then it sits with the instructions in it next to the microwave. And we don't use it, or maybe we use it once. We saw on TikTok a recipe for a slow cooker lasagna, and we're like, whoa, a slow cooker lasagna, that might be worth it. And you made it, and it was fine. But then the thought of doing something again on the slow cooker, that's just, and then the way you and I were raised, I can't turn that on and leave for the day and come home and find my dinner. I think all day that it's going to catch on fire. That's what I would think all day, that the slow cooker is going to catch on fire while I'm doing work things. The other thing that collects guilt is the CVS pharmacy receipts. The very long CVS pharmacy receipts, where you get this much off, this much off. Oh my gosh, if I buy this, I'll get $4 off. Let me just go through my receipts with you and see if there's anything worth the trouble. Right now, I can get $2 off. $2 off, $12 your next purchase. So if I buy $12 worth of stuff, I'll get $2. Oh, I get extra bucks. Extra bucks are the best ones. $2 off. Extra buck rewards for pharmacy activities of opted-in family members. So if I have an opt-in family member, I'll get $2 off something of theirs. 15% off L'Oreal Paris. Every time I get a CVS receipt, I always get something off L'Oreal Paris. Hair color. I can get a $1. See, this is these are the bad ones. $1 off for Lindt Premium Chocolate. If I get a big bag of Lindt Chocolate, I'll get a buck off. But again, this expires when? Tomorrow. It expires tomorrow. Now I have to run and get Lindt Chocolate tomorrow. Or $2 off two Hallmark cards. Got to buy two Hallmark cards. When does it expire? Tomorrow. $1 off any cough, cold, or flu products. When does it expire? Tomorrow. This is a lot of pressure. That's a lot of organizing. I need to know when it expires, how much it is. Oh, I only bought $11 worth of stuff. I had to buy 12. This is a lot of pressure. It's like buying a Sunday newspaper. You mean well. You get that 5-inch thick Sunday newspaper, and you and I never finish reading it. Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
I wish you a peaceful Passover. And now from coast to coast, Dr. Dave Wet.
Sailing every night, lost in space. Mission control, Dave Scott.
Dave Scott, our Canadian friend, who's an expert on UFOs, metaphysics, monsters. Dave, did you go to Coachella this year?
I did not. I've never been to Coachella.
Have you ever been to an outdoor concert other than Peter, Paul, and Mary?
I did. In 1992, I moshed my way through 30,000 people to watch Def Leppard in the second row.
Impressive. Was it worth it?
It was worth it until I felt fingernails in the back of my shoulders. And when I realized that there was a young lady right behind me about my age at 19 and her boyfriend was behind her, if you know what I'm saying, it was a little uncomfortable at that point.
Amazing, a live concert experience. I believe very strongly that if you go to a Coachella or a concert like Burning Man, one of those events, that those are just fine if you are 18. And the cutoff age must be 18 and a half. After you're 18 and a half, you have no business being at a Coachella or a Burning Man. And every year it's the same story at Coachella. It's in the desert. It's 110 degrees. They have a foot of mud. Terrible traffic problems and sound problems. Oh, gee. And you know, you realize that thing goes on for 2 weekends.
I know. I would love to go. You know what's really cool though, Walter, is like I'm an older father. I'm 51 years old and my son is 11. And what's really cool now is taking my son to concerts. You know, I've taken him to a couple of concerts. My wife has taken him to a concert. And watching him experience, like my son, he's not into all this new wave music. He's into heavy metal. And I've taken him to Guns N' Roses. We've taken him to Iron Maiden. We've taken him to a band, a Swedish metal band called Avatar, where we literally had front row and the singer kept on coming up to the gate where my little guy was, and he's like, hey, guy, do you need some water? Are you okay? Are you having fun? He did that about five times, came up to my boy. And then my son's favorite guitarist from that band, after the show, came right up to him. He's like, I was watching you rock all show. You're awesome, little guy. Here's a couple of guitar picks. To me, that is the greatest moment that I've had.
My middle child likes to go to concerts. She goes to pretty alt-rock concerts. She'll go to Greer. There's a band called Greer. And she goes to, Roan, R-O-E-N. What's her first name? Big hits. She has big hits. But the, let's see, the last two concerts I've been to is I went to Haim. Do you know Haim?
No.
Okay, it's three women. They're terrific. They're the opening act for Taylor Swift. That's what gives them credit. And amazingly, they've been at it for 10 years, opening acts for like Taylor Swift, and have yet to break through with a hit. And that I'll just never under. And then my wife and I, we go to Hanson concerts. Now, to me, the great thing about Hanson concerts, besides the fact that they're always indoors, and that it's all hits, is that, get this, they start exactly on time. To me, that is the greatest thing a concert performer can give us, is they start exactly on time. Dave Scott, great Canadian, great broadcaster. What was the greatest concert you ever saw in person? What was the greatest one?
Well, there's two. I would say I am a Guns N' Roses addict. I've seen Guns N' Roses eight times, and including their first stop in Las Vegas on the reunion tour. I've been absolutely amazed by GNR Music over the years. That's my band. But the greatest concert I ever went to, my wife surprised me in 2012 with tickets to Roger Waters' 30th anniversary of The Wall. And we were 19th row on the floor. And the theatrics and everything, like just talking about that now, you know, 10, 12 years later, 13 years later, it still gives me goosebumps, you know, hearing all The Wall being played from start to finish, and the amazing artistry of Roger Waters and his band and their music. To this day, when I die, that'll still be my favorite concert ever.
Dave Scott, expert on UFOs and concerts. What's the name of that band that Canadians are obsessed with that we've never heard of? What's that band?
The Tragically Hip.
The Tragically Hip. Have you been to their concerts?
Unfortunately, no. I didn't get into the Hip until Gord Downie, their lead singer, really got sick with a brain tumor, and he has since passed away about 5-7 years ago now. But yeah, they're a Canadian icon, that's for sure.
Do you have updates for us on UFO things?
Well, the big debate right now in the UFO world is what's the truth? And what I mean by that, Walter, is there's a big scramble in ufology right now between longtime researchers, longtime skeptics, and this new wave of government people and whistleblowers who are coming out and trying to take over the UFO narrative. And, you know, we're not hearing much out of Washington, D.C. right now. There have been a couple of new videos that were brought out that, once again, they're so far away. You know, it's a trust me, bro situation on whether or not these are UFOs or some little kid lost their balloon at an amusement park. You know, and the point that I'm getting at with all of this is, when things are a mad scramble like the way they are, information doesn't pass through very smoothly. And now a lot of people are starting to awaken to the idea that the information load is being centralized. And you and I talked about that about a week and a half ago, about the fact that all of these whistleblowers and everybody is starting to be controlled under a narrative where only YouTube influencers are starting to get the guests. So, for instance, you or me, Walter, as professional radio hosts, mm-hmm. we could put in a request for, say, whistleblower John Doe. We're mm-hmm. not going to get him. But somebody like Logan Paul, who has 30 million subscribers on YouTube, he's going to be involved in all of their videos to try and pump up the amount of people who see it. And that's kind of the way the information is going. Finally, we're starting to see people in the UFO world catch on to these shenanigans and say, hey, whoa, 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 I've been doing this for 50 years. Why am I not being able to get information? Why am I not allowed to have access to these guys? Why am I not allowed to interview them? And this is a great conundrum right now.
Yet you do have a significant presence on YouTube at Spaced Out Radio. Spaced Out Radio, that would qualify you as an influencer.
Well, it would, but here's the weird part about it. I met with a gentleman in San Francisco last week. His name is Martin Willis, and he has had one of the top UFO podcasts. It's called Podcast UFO, and he's been doing it for over a decade. And him and I had this talk about YouTube really tanking channels like mine and his. He has about 50,000 subscribers. And recently, over the last few months, you know, he would average about 10 to 20,000 views per video. He is down to between 6 and 8,000 views a video now. My views on my shows have gone from about 2,500 views down to about 1,100. And it doesn't seem to be getting better. So I didn't know that Martin had actually talked to other YouTube channels that deal with UFOs, and they are talking about the same thing, that their numbers are going down. I have a friend of mine named Carl who works out of the Uinta Basin right beside Skinwalker Ranch, and he has over 3 million subscribers on his YouTube channel, and his videos have gone from about 30 to 50,000 views down to about 11 to 16,000 views. And so all of these people who are dealing in the UFO subject right now are saying, what is happening to our views? Many of them have actually contacted YouTube to say, what is going on? Why are our numbers dropping quicker than quicksand, or sinking quicker than quicksand, pardon me? And YouTube's answer to that is, there's nothing wrong with the algorithms. People must not be interested in that subject. And that is a bold-faced lie. You know, yeah. I mean, we can't figure it out.
Well, it is and it isn't. There's nothing wrong with the algorithm. What it is, and it's the same reason why Meta would like to get rid of it, those crowds are going to TikTok. And that's why Meta would like to see it sold or thrown out of the country. That's what it is. SpacedOutRadio.com, SpacedOutRadio.com. Great to have you on, Mr. Scott. Walter M. Sterling, every damn Sunday.
Now, John!
I exclusively watched Lesbian. And all these straight girls would be like, yeah, that's normal. Straight girls watch Lesbian. And I find that so damaging, because it's like, then me as a lesbian, I was like, oh, I'm not a lesbian, I'm straight. I just like Lesbian.
James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. Okay, well, for our first Florida Story, we're going to go down to Port St. Lucie.
Hold my beer.
A man is jailed after accusations of taking teens to park to, he says, do their thing. I know. Okay, so it's actually the kid's dad. The boy's dad takes him and his girlfriend to the park. Now, I know, like, some parents overdo it with trying to be cool with their kids and whatnot, but even if you're okay with your kid doing it and you want to facilitate that, Wouldn't you let them go to your bedroom? Would you really take them to a public place? But this guy did. So that's how it's Florida crazy from the father's point of view. But from the son's point of view, when the 15-year-old son came back with his 15-year-old girlfriend, the cops asked where they had been. This is the quote, effing and smoking. Can you imagine saying that to a cop when you're 15? Effing and smoking. That is amazing.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
Okay, for our next Florida story, we're going up to Marion County where woman's going to jail after pushing her neighbor and saying, I'm a Kardashian, I'm going to F you up. She's 35 years old. Her name's Crystal. Crystal's one of those names where you've known a lot of Crystals, and I can't tell you who is going to cure cancer, but I can tell you their name is not going to be Crystal. So Crystal gets arrested for simple battery, screaming at her neighbors, yelling, making a big scene at 2 p.m. Her reason? She said her neighbor is nosy. Neighbor is nosy. I don't think that would have been on the Family Feud top six answers on the board or whatever.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
For our next Florida story, we go down to Flagler County, Florida, where pot keeps washing up on the shores. A Florida man tried to take 11 pounds of marijuana that washed up on a county beach, but didn't report it to law enforcement. The local sheriff is quoted in the paper here saying the guy tried to take advantage of a situation and it completely backfired on him. The cops show up. This guy is putting bales of weed in his car, and the cops say, what are you going to do with that? He said, I was holding it for you. It didn't really work that well, did it? Now, that's a funny story to you and me, but in Florida, this is normal. In this one county, over 100 pounds of marijuana has turned up on the beach over the course of 2 days. 23 bales of marijuana washed up on the beach in Ormond by the Sea, which is the next county over. Florida, where drugs just wash up on the beach.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
Florida man won't be charged in bestiality case because of law loophole. You know what? We're just going to skip that one. That's
it. Hold my beer.
Hold my
beer. What is it?
Not today, buddy. All right, for our next Florida story, we go down to Tampa. Now, this one's actually kind of awful. A 34-year-old named Keith is our Florida man. He's going to prison on a manslaughter charge. These guys got in an argument over a pool game. One guy punches the other. He falls and hits his head and dies. It's kind of one of these freak accident things, but a guy's going to jail for manslaughter. That's one of those where sometimes Florida's funny, sometimes Florida's serious, man. It's
hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
We'll end on a good one here. Florida neighbors can't bear the sight of their nude gardener. This is in Stuart, Florida. Residents in a North Stuart neighborhood complained to the sheriff about a man who does yard work and walks around his property in the buff. Deputies say there's nothing they can do. Really? So you can just do that? A neighbor named Melissa says, I came out Sunday night to put the trash out, and I look over, and he's bent over winding up his hose, and that's in the view of my neighborhood. She means his garden hose. Thank you very much. Don't look at me like that, Mr. Producer over there. Something's wrong with him. But another neighbor, Molly, seems much more cool when she's asked by the newspaper what's going on. I am not one of those people that have concerns because it is their way of life and it is on their property and I know it is legal. Very pragmatic, that Molly. The TV station tried to speak with the nude gardener. He declined to be interviewed. He said he was not interested in being interviewed because he and his family were private people. Right.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
Follow me on Twitter at FloridaStoriesJ. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
And I'm a misfit, oh. First thing on my mind is to get rich, oh. I'm a misfit, that means I don't fit, nah, I don't fit.
Oh, wait,
and
we have another feed from Coachella. You ready for this? Do you hear this?
Lord, forgive me.
Oh, my God. Doo-wop Gold from Coachella. Ready? Go. That's enough. You know what it sounds like. You know where to get it. I don't have to pursue. But I do want to stay in touch with you at all times. Now, coming up in just seconds, you and I are going to hear from Thea Landon. I could talk, or you could hear Thea Landon. I know the truth. And if I'm alone in that truck, in that 18-wheeler, in the middle of Illinois, or God help you, Indiana, I know what I'd rather hear. My website is waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. I have emails. I answer the emails. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. And then we have spectacular artwork and photos at Walter Sterling on Facebook. But I want you to pick up that phone and take a picture of whatever you're looking at and send me a Sterling snap to WalterMSterling@gmail.com every damn Sunday.
Now, join the lesbians in space.
As a kid, my parents sent me to a conversion camp. Totally worked. I've been gay ever since.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. For our first Florida story, we go down to Jacksonville. A Florida man is indicted for a $5 million fraud scheme. 64-year-old Dwayne Sykes, over the last 10 years, slowly drained about $5 million from his employer at a credit union. And how'd he do it? He would buy stamps on the company account, take those stamps and go sell them on the street. That's right, black market stamps. How very Florida of you, Dwayne. To make it even more Florida, neighbors were surprised because he lived in a middle-class house, drove a dumpy car, didn't dress flashy. What did he do with all the money? It turns out he's produced 85 movies and TV shows since 2007. He has his own IMDb page. Now, none of them are hits. They all stink. But really, you're going to go to prison after stealing $5 million from your employer and wasting it on crappy movies? You think that's bad? Oh, this is Florida Stories. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we're in Niceville, Florida. The Florida man was apparently drunk and arrested. Oh, can you believe it? A drunk Florida man. After trying to break into a McDonald's after hours and destroying a menu sign outside. A 44-year-old man was knocking on the glass trying to get into the store. The employees wouldn't let him in. He's arrested and charged with felony property damage. Dude, the food's not even that good. Who would want McDonald's that bad? Taco Bell? Maybe. Not McDonald's. It gets worse. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next story, we go to Sanford, Florida. Uh-oh, we've heard that before. Jay-Z and Beyonce, of all people, are producing a documentary about the 2012 shooting of Trayvon Martin. And in their research for the documentary, they've uncovered some text messages from George Zimmerman where he threatened to feed Jay-Z and Beyonce to an alligator. And another text, here's the quote, "Oh yeah, and tell Jay-Z he's a B and his wife is a broke whore." But I can't speak on the Jay-Z part, but there's no way anyone can think Beyonce is broke. And she's not the one who slept around. Jay-Z's the one who cheated on her. It gets weirder, though. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
For our next Florida story, we go down to Marathon. A Florida man is facing more than 300 violations after police say they found almost 200 lobster tails in the trunk of his car, and 150 of them were undersized. All of the lobsters were speared, and it is illegal to spear fish for lobster in the Keys. Florida man admitted the lobsters were his. He admitted to catching all the lobsters that night, which I'm kind of impressed. 200 lobsters? How long does it take to spear 200 lobsters? Have you seen 200 lobsters in the same spot? How do you get to a place where there's 200 lobsters waiting to be speared? I'm kind of impressed. But if you want a little Florida bonus there, the cops searched his car because it smelled like weed. Hey, man. If you're going to be out illegally spearfishing undersized lobsters, don't smoke in the car. I think it gets weirder than that. Hold my beer. For our next Florida story, we're going to go back to Niceville for this one. There was a house fire last week. Niceville police officers and firefighters showed up around 5:30 p.m. They could see smoke coming from inside. But then a naked man bust out the front door, said, "I'm sorry," and closed the door. According to the offense report from the police department, the man showed no signs of understanding what sort of danger he was in. Several things were on fire in the house. Cops had to detain him and remove him from his own house for his own safety. Firefighters say if he stayed in the house much longer, he would have possibly died from smoke inhalation. And you don't want to die from smoke inhalation when you're naked.
A quick investigation showed the fire started while the guy was trying to bake cookies on a George Foreman grill, which I might have to try that. That might work. And if you were wondering, yes, Florida man is, of course, intoxicated. He admitted to drinking 2 liters of vodka and smoking weed starting around 9 a.m. that morning. And I saved the weirdest for last. Hold my beer.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
For our final Florida story, we're going to go down to Clearwater. A 20-year-old Florida man in a laundromat about 2:30 a.m. decided it was time to pull down his pants and start whipping his mule. Cops show up, and even though all the other patrons had bailed, who can blame them? The guy is still going to town when the cops show up, watching dirty movies on his phone. Cops ask him why he did it. He said, it helps with anxiety. Bro, if you have anxiety, maybe you should, I don't know, exercise, maybe try some Xanax, or you can do what almost everyone else does in Florida, and just drink yourself silly. Or, how about this? Find a partner! And do it in your own home.
Wait. Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What is it?
Follow me on Twitter at FloridaStoriesJ. I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story.
I'm studying every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the owl and dog.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my short story, Signs of Seduction, Aries. Standing at the baseline, Aubrey inhaled and exhaled several times to compose herself. She visualized the ball going exactly where she wanted it and aimed her first serve. It bounced off her racket with a satisfying thwack and sailed to the back corner of the service box. Nash was ready for the return and found a winning angle to end the point quickly. One down, three to go, she thought. Just as they had practiced for countless hours, she and Nash moved around the court with flawless coordination. Before long, it was time to serve for the championship point. She remembered how much work they had both put in, and his earlier words echoed in her ears. They were destined to be winners. They would achieve this goal together. She hit the ball over the net, putting it in play one more time. They engaged in a prolonged rally, neither pair willing to concede. Rachel's partner dove for a wide ball, hitting it upward in a high arc in Aubrey's direction. Everything around her seemed to blur and slow down as she realized this could be the final shot of the match. A broad range of options presented themselves to her, but she knew how she wanted to end this. Positioning herself beneath the lob, she held her racket behind her head and leaned back, waiting for the ball to drop. At the exact right moment, she swung as hard as she could, smashing the ball directly at Rachel. Her rival was caught off guard and couldn't recover fast enough. Though she managed to connect with the ball, it bounced off the frame of her racket, sending it flying into the stands. As soon as the umpire called the match, Aubrey let out a shout of delight and whirled around to find Nash. The expression on his face melted her heart. Dropping his racket, he held out his arms to her. She rushed toward him, leaping into his waiting embrace, and he picked her up and swung her around in a circle. "See, I told you we would win," he said near her ear. "We need to do something fun to celebrate." When her feet touched the ground again, she didn't want to let him go, but their post-match obligations beckoned. She jogged toward the net to shake her opponent's hands, as well as the umpire's. Rachel congratulated her on the victory, and she opted to take it at face value and thank her. though she ached to get out of her sweaty clothes and hop in the shower. Aubrey remained poised and composed throughout the brief awards ceremony, a gracious champion. In the back of her head, she wondered what Nash had in mind for a celebration. Maybe something like a nice dinner, she thought. A change of pace from the usual healthy foods Marco and his colleagues picked out for her. After posing for pictures for the Academy's promotional materials, the players returned inside. Aubrey wasn't looking forward to spending any more time than necessary with Rachel, but she followed her into the locker room without saying a word. "Nice match," the other woman finally said, shattering the awkward silence. "You had some great shots today." "Thanks. So did you." She huffed out a sigh. "You and Nash make a good team. Lucky you." "He's a talented player." She kicked at the floor with the toe of her sneaker. "Everyone here is. But I guess our styles complement each other pretty well." "You don't have to rub it in." Rachel shut her locker door with a bang. "But enjoy the win. You never know what will happen next time around." She didn't bother answering. Once alone in the room, she closed her eyes and took a moment to savor her triumph. She would never relent in her training or assume the day's win guaranteed similar success in the future. But she and Nash had played well and deserved the title. The next round of practice and strategizing could wait until tomorrow. Behind her, the door opened. Aubrey turned, expecting to see Rachel again, and her jaw dropped when Nash crossed the threshold. He locked the door behind him, then strode toward her. Her eyes widened. "What are you?" He cut her off by capturing her mouth in a crushing kiss. His fingers tangled in her hair as his tongue plunged past her lips. Though she was initially shocked by his domineering actions, the heat radiating off his body and the tangy taste of him erased her hesitancy. Sliding her hands up his shoulders, she leaned into him and reciprocated the intensity of his kiss. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my short story, Signs of Seduction, Aries. If you'd like to hear the uncensored excerpts and also get a few sneak peeks, you can go to patreon.com/Thea Landon. And don't forget, you can always send me your innermost thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's keep going. He let out a hum of satisfaction against her lips. "You have no idea how long I've been wanting to do this," he murmured. "I couldn't wait any longer." She drew back and raised her eyebrows. "I heard rumors you weren't interested in any sort of romantic entanglements here at Sunrise Hills." "Who cares about rumors?" Nash grabbed her by the waist and slammed their bodies together. "I know what I want. And what I want, aside from winning, is to find out how you feel after months spent watching you move." Without releasing her, he steered her against the lockers. Aubrey tilted her head back and closed her eyes as he kissed a path down the side of her neck. As his mouth traveled lower, one hand skimmed over the front of her snug tank top. She whimpered when he grazed the underside of her chest, craving more contact. Sharp teeth nipped at her skin as his fingers sank into her flesh. All her senses went into overdrive. She couldn't get enough of him. They were sweaty and disheveled, yet still riding the high of their success. Adrenaline and arousal pulsed through her, and instead of being exhausted from the grueling match, she was wide awake. In all her fantasies about what the day of the championship might bring, she never dreamed Nash would see her as someone other than his teammate. That he desired her, let alone acted on those desires, excited her as much as winning the tournament. She needed this. They needed this. As he groped and kneaded, nibbled and kissed, she wrapped her arms around him to hold him close. Her hips rolled forward, and he pressed into her in return. She ground against him, desperate to soothe the ache building inside her. Fire streaked through her veins. Though they were equal partners out on the court, now she wanted him to make her his. His hand slid down her body, slipping beneath the hem of her tennis skirt. He stroked the back of her thigh, then gave her a firm squeeze as he brought his mouth to her ear. "Tell me what you want," he demanded. "We could go to my place, yours, someplace fancy, or..." The idea of letting him go at this point was unfathomable. With the tips of her fingers, Aubrey guided his face back toward hers so she could gaze into his shimmering blue eyes. "I want you." She swallowed, her heart pounding. "Now." Snaking his hand between them, he cupped her through her tiny shorts. She bit back a moan, and his wicked chuckle resonated in her ears. I can tell." She grabbed the collar of his polo shirt and kissed him again, her hunger erasing everything else from her mind. Nash wrenched her shorts and panties down and away, his lips never leaving hers. She, in turn, yearned to explore more of him, and she tugged at his shirt. He backed away long enough to rip it off over his head and fling it aside, then resumed his assault on her mouth.